Thursday, February 22nd, 2018, you are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City. That is Denver, Colorado. You know, we get together and we talk sports every single weekday. We try to do it with a dose of common sense. We try not to take ourselves too seriously. We try to give you maybe something to smile about every single day, and we are happy to have you right here with us today on the podcast. Happy Thursday to you. You know, today, February 22nd, you might not realize, is National California Day. Yes, California has its own day. And I know we have some listeners in California. You know what California is all about. But maybe you're not from California. Maybe you haven't been to California. Maybe you're not quite sure what California is really like to be there. I would suggest this. Go find a car that is running. Put your lips as close to the tailpipe as you can and inhale deeply. And it will taste just like the fresh air in California. Taste the smog. Just a little hint of California today on your Thursday. Maybe run your hands under some boiling water. It's all the same. It's going to be just like you're there. If you would like to contact the show, tell us what you will be inhaling on National California Day. We would love to hear from you. You can email us here at dailydosports@gmail.com or reach out to us over on Twitter or Facebook. Both of those handles are at Daily Dose Sports. And if you have a suggestion, maybe you have some feedback, maybe you need some advice, feel free to hit us up because we would love to hear from you. You know, we've got a lot to get to today on this Thursday. We do have a few stories that are coming out in the world of sports that we want to make sure we touch on. And as we do every single Thursday, we also need to get to a weekly segment that we do that is called Overreactions of the Week. Because it seems like every single week, the sports media world is giving us things that just don't make a whole lot of sense. We kind of discuss them. Discuss whether or not they are worth our time. Try to figure out exactly what the sports media world is trying to tell us. Couple of things coming out in the world of breaking sports news today. One thing that is coming out, and I'm not going to lie, it's scaring me a little bit, because this is a little bit of a horrifying story. In his first interview, since suffering a severe spinal injury in early December, Pittsburgh Steelers linebacker Ryan Shazier says he is planning to play football again. Yes, we saw him get carted off. We have seen him being in a wheelchair. Shazier, 25, he had to undergo spinal stabilization surgery back in December after trying to make a tackle on Monday Night Football in Cincinnati. And we all saw him immediately clutching his lower back. He was rushed to a local hospital, and eventually he was transported to University of Pittsburgh Medical Center. Shazier has been utilizing a wheelchair, but they say he's making progress in his rehab, and he has been cleared for outpatient care as of February 1st. Now, as much as I want to look at this story, and I want to think of what a testament it is to human will and mental and physical strength, it is also terrifying to think of it. If Shazier does actually get back out onto the field, because here's the thing. After all of the standing ovations that Ryan Shazier will no doubt get, he is going to have to play inside linebacker, one of the most physical positions in all of football. And he is going to take more hits, just like the one he took that injured him to begin with. Hey, I'm not saying Ryan Shazier should retire. I'm not saying he should no longer attempt to play. And who knows if he ever will. I'm just saying I would like be watching him through my fingers, hoping nothing would happen the entire time. Football is scary enough as it is, let alone when it's a guy who has already had a major spinal injury. Best of luck to Ryan Shazier. If the idea of playing is what is motivating him, I totally understand. But I'm just throwing this out there. That is a horrifying situation. I would imagine for his family, for his friends, all the people involved in his life, even just the casual fan watching is going to be going, oh my goodness, is this the best idea? I'm not sure he should be back out there. We know he's going to get hit. It's not like he's playing quarterback or like kicker or even maybe, I don't know, maybe like a wide receiver where you say, he might be able to avoid some hits. He's playing linebacker. He's going to get hit. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. It's going to happen, and it's going to happen again and again and again. Best of luck to Shazier. It's going to be very scary. Hey, coming back, we will have our weekly Daily Dose segment. That's right, the best overreactions from the sports media world. What nonsense are we being told this week that just doesn't make a whole lot of sense? We will get to our weekly overreactions in just 1 minute. But before we talk about those, we all know that Major League Baseball is looking to speed up their game. We know that, right? Game is too slow. No one under the age of 50 even watches Major League Baseball. So they have been trying to put in a few things to speed it up. Here's the problem. Just don't expect the players to care one single bit. Because Chicago Cubs catcher Wilson Contreras, he isn't exactly on board with Major League Baseball's new pace of play rules, which include a limit on the number of mound visits you can have per game. Contreras says he'll defy the rule that limits teams to just 6 visits for the first 9 innings of a game, except for a few exceptions, pitcher changes, and that kind of thing. I don't even care, Contreras said. If I have to go out there again and pay the price for my team, I will. He says he would be willing to pay a fine. He says he will even be willing to deal with harsher consequences, though baseball is hoping it never gets that far. Speaking at a news conference earlier this week, Major League Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred and Chief Officer Joe Torre said umpires simply will tell a catcher or other players to return to their position if his team has already used up their 6 visits. If a catcher defies that order and gets into an argument with an umpire, then an ejection could be in order. So let me see if I have this straight. Major League Baseball is doing their very, very best to try to speed up their game, to improve their product, so that they can get more viewers, so that they can get more money, so that they can have a younger generation interested in this game that is way, way, way too slow. But the players don't care. Now, maybe Contreras is the exception in this, and he's the only one that's really spoke out about it. That's possible. Maybe he's just the only guy that is going to take this kind of stand, but I kind of have my doubts. I think he's just the only guy who has said anything about it. I think there are a number of players that feel this way. But if I had to guess, I would say most players are going to ignore it. I think most players feel the way Contreras does. Hey, here's the deal. If I feel like going out and talking to my pitcher, or I feel like it's going to help my pitcher, I'm going out there, and I don't care if you like it or not. Most players, I think, are going to ignore it. And you know what I'll also predict? I'll also predict that these rules won't be followed one single bit anyways. We've already talked about it here on The Dose. There are already rules in place to keep baseball moving. No one obeys them. No one enforces them. There is already a timer set between pitches that Major League umpires are supposed to enforce. When was the last time you ever saw anything like that enforced? Never. Never happens. None of this stuff is going to happen either. Because see, the players don't care. The players are going to do exactly what they want because they've been doing exactly what they want for how many years now? And baseball's not going to enforce it because what's everyone going to say? Oh, you're totally changing the game. You're completely changing all this. The players are going to pay no attention to these rules. And baseball doesn't have the spine to step up and actually do anything about it. What are they going to do next? Enforce banned substance suspensions? We all know baseball's not doing that. Okay, as we do every single week, we have got to get to our Thursday overreactions of the week. You know, every single week, we like to take a look around the sports world, see what overreactions the sports media might be jamming down our throat. And usually, we hear these overreactions and we just say something simple like,
that was an overreaction.
We've got a few of these this week. I'm warning you ahead of time, we've got a few overreactions this week. First overreaction I heard, reported by a very big name NFL pundit. A guy that if I say the name, you would recognize. Probably the biggest name in NFL sports news is out there. And he is reporting that the Denver Broncos are expecting to make Trevor Siemian available in a trade. You know, Siemian has started the majority of Denver's games the last 2 seasons, but the Broncos are looking to see if he would have any trade value. So they are dangling him out there and seeing if any teams would be willing to make a trade for Trevor Siemian. Wait a second. So we're being told by this top NFL pundit that the Denver Broncos want to see if a guy on their roster, a roster that has now struggled to win any games in not just one, but 2 consecutive seasons, has value. Yeah, this was clearly a slow news day, wasn't it? The Broncos should be seeing if any and every player on their roster has any value whatsoever. Cause I've seen them go like 6-10 2 years in a row. I don't know if anyone has any value on that entire roster. Here's the problem. They're looking to shop any of these quarterbacks, but the problem is Paxton Lynch has zero trade value. Paxton Lynch has zero value, period. It doesn't look like he is capable of playing at the NFL level. So we know they can't dangle Paxton Lynch out there, and Brock Osweiler is a free agent. So of course they're seeing if they can get anything for Trevor Siemian. They don't have any other quarterbacks to dangle out there. This isn't news. I mean, this is news in the way that, you know, people would say, I would like to have some money. Of course you would. Everyone would. The Broncos would like to see if Trevor Siemian has any trade value. Of course they would. They don't have much else to trade. Maybe someone would give them a decent pick for a quarterback that they're not real sure what they're going to do with anyway. Because they're going to go try to make a run at somebody, I would think, in free agency. It's just not news. It's being told to us like it's news. It's not news. Another story in the NFL concerning another NFL quarterback. Because I have now heard a few people on major sports networks saying that NFL teams should be offering not just one, but two first round picks for backup Philadelphia Eagles quarterback Nick Foles. Really? One pick's not enough to offer for Nick Foles? Gotta offer two, huh? I've even heard them say, I would offer two first rounders and maybe a second rounder for Nick Foles. Okay, slow down. Again, in sports, we tend to get emotional. Like we get caught up in the emotion of the game. We got all excited about, did you see Nick Foles in the Super Bowl? Did you see what he did against Minnesota? Nick Foles, I'm just going to say it. He might be the greatest quarterback who ever lived. Slow down. I like Nick Foles. Great, great story. What he was able to do this year, when Carson Wentz went down with the knee injury, is nothing less than spectacular. Nick Foles delivered a championship to Philadelphia and all the Eagles fans, and what an amazing story, and how well did he play down the stretch to get them that championship. Nick Foles was excellent in two games. Maybe a third game. But let's keep in mind one thing. Nick Foles was surrounded by a very, very good team this year in Philadelphia. He got hot. He played great, like I said, in two, maybe a third game. I don't know exactly where we classify that Atlanta game. He was good. He wasn't great. He was very, very good against Minnesota in the NFC Championship game, and he was excellent in the Super Bowl against the New England Patriots. He deserves a ton of credit. But let's also not forget that he was considering retirement after the 2015 season. Can Nick Foles be a solid quarterback on a good team? Yes. We saw that this season. But is this a guy that is going to carry a team that doesn't have much of a good supporting cast? Probably not. Nick Foles was pretty average in that exact same situation with the Rams. Remember that back in 2015? He didn't really show us that much. He's okay. He wasn't horrible. He wasn't great. Is Nick Foles the guy you want to mortgage your entire future for? I mean, I guess you can if you want. But I would warn you this, you're probably going to end up being very, very disappointed. I don't know that Nick Foles is that guy. He is a guy that looked very, very good with a great surrounding cast. He's not a guy that's just going to be a franchise quarterback that's just going to lead your team. He needs some help. He had a ton of it in Philly. And I still go back to this, if I'm Philadelphia, there's no way I deal Nick Foles this year. I want that backup quarterback. I want that safety cushion back there. If anything happens to Carson Wentz again, hey, I know I've got a proven guy. We can surround him with talent. We've got the system here where he can be successful. Could you take Nick Foles, go plug him into the Browns and suddenly win 8-9 games? No, I don't think he could. And so these writers and these people on TV that are telling us you should be offering everything you possibly have for Nick Foles. Yeah, I don't think so. I think you're going to end up being very, very disappointed. Hey, coming back, we will continue our overreactions of the week, including one about the Daytona 500 that just took place over the weekend. And we also have some major overreactions from that NBA All-Star weekend. Gotta get to those when we get back. Just a quick reminder that if you have any shopping you need to do, you might as well head over to lootcrate.com/dailydose, where you can find the latest pop culture collectibles featuring your favorite TV shows, your favorite movies, and your favorite video games. March's Loot Crate theme is called Playback, and it features items from Back to the Future, Sonic the Hedgehog, Dungeons and Dragons, and The Simpsons. The best part about ordering from Loot Crate when you check out, be sure you type Daily Dose into the coupon box. We will get you 10% off of your entire order. And if you're listening to those franchises and you're saying, those don't really interest me, if you go over to Loot Crate, I'm telling you right now, they have a million franchises to choose from. And they've got pretty much any item you can think of. They've got things for your desk at work. They've got things for your car. They've got things for your house. They've got things for your pet. Make sure that you head over to lootcrate.com and check out some of the things that they have going on over there. Now, we've got to get back to our Daily Dose weekly segment, Overreactions of the Week, where we take a look at some of the biggest overreactions that the sports media is shoveling to us, and we usually kind of push those right back at them. Because a lot of the stuff they're giving us doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Okay, now I'm going to give you an overreaction that I saw this week, and it might not be that popular. And first off, we don't really talk a whole lot of auto racing here on the podcast, but we've got to talk a little bit of it today, because I keep getting told the same thing. I keep hearing the same feedback on the Daytona 500 that took place on Sunday. If you didn't see the race on Sunday, and I understand that, Austin Dillon won the race in a car and in a ride that used to belong back in the day to Dale Earnhardt Sr. Everyone got all excited. And the biggest thing I'm getting is, did you see the Daytona 500 on Sunday? It was amazing. Did you see all the crashes? Did you see the great finish right at the very end? Austin Dillon pulled it out. What an amazing finish that was. What great racing that was. NASCAR hit a home run on Sunday. I'll tell you that right now. NASCAR hit an absolute home run. That Daytona 500 was absolutely amazing. Okay, let's be real clear about a few things concerning the Daytona 500 that took place this last Sunday. Yes, it was exciting. Yes, there were a lot of crashes. There were, what, three, maybe four significant crashes that took a number of competitors out. Here's the thing. Why wouldn't there be? Why wouldn't there be a lot of crashes? NASCAR manipulates these races so that there are a million crashes. I'm going to let you in on a little secret that you might not know. NASCAR wants crashes.
What?
Yeah, I said it. I know. That might sound crazy to you, but I'm telling you, NASCAR wants crashes. See, every single restart, you will see NASCAR bunch up all the cars, and not just bunch them up in a single file, they'll bunch them up two by two so that they can get them as close as they possibly can to each other. Because again, NASCAR loves crashes. They want crashes. You know what else they want? They want drivers to run into each other. And then maybe after the race, if they want to fight each other, they love that too. You don't believe me, right? Like you're sitting there saying, man, come on. NASCAR doesn't want crashes. That's not true. NASCAR doesn't want these drivers fighting with each other. That's not true either. Don't believe me? Just do this. There's another NASCAR race coming up this weekend. Watch the beginning of that race. Or watch the beginning of any NASCAR race ever. They will show about three or four crashes just in the opening highlights. And then they will show a clip of a fight that took place between drivers. Maybe it'll be like Cale Yarborough fighting Donnie Allison, or maybe it'll be like Darrell Waltrip and Rusty Wallace's teams full on fighting. Whatever it might be, they will show those. Why would they want crashes, and why do they want these fights? More viewers. More excitement. They are hoping like crazy, just maybe, they can suck a few more people in that normally wouldn't watch racing. They normally wouldn't watch their product. But maybe if we show the crashes and we show the fights, it might pull a few extra people in. So look at this race this past Sunday. First, with just two laps to go, driver Ryan Blaney crashes leader Kurt Busch. Busch drives into the corner, and Blaney gives him a little tap that forces him to lose control going into the corner. He spins, and the wreck knocks out like 10 or 15 other cars. Blaney, of course, drives on by and now takes the lead. Then, because of that crash, we get NASCAR overtime, they call it, which takes place when there's only like a lap or two left so that the race doesn't finish on a caution. They're going to throw the green flag again. You're going to get a green flag. Then the next lap, you're going to get a white flag. And then you're going to get the checkers, which will end the race. So they've got two laps left. Kind of amazing how that worked out, isn't it? We have one guy crash another guy. And then, hey, let's have overtime. It's going to be amazing. Feels a little bit fixed right there. So they do the NASCAR overtime, right? So in the overtime, we see Eric Almirola leading the race. And guess what happens to him? As he drives into the corner, Austin Dillon shoves him into the corner a little bit too, which spins him, and Austin Dillon goes on to a Brave victory. Oh, what an amazing finish. That was incredible. Did you see? Two big wrecks right at the end, and then the guy that is driving, the car that Dale Earnhardt Sr. used to drive, gets the win. That was absolutely amazing. Not only is this asinine and dangerous behavior not punished, it is rewarded by NASCAR. Why? Because they want crashes. See, their stance on these bumps has always been the same. When you're shoving a guy into the corner like that, at the small tracks, it's frowned upon, but they allow it because it's not real high speed and it's not a big deal. But at the big tracks, there is a serious element of danger for the driver because they are at such high speeds. You don't know what's going to happen. He might flip up and over. He might get up into the grandstand. He might take 3, 4, 5, 10, 15 cars with him. Yet we saw on Sunday that not once, but twice, drivers pushed an opponent out of the way in order to complete a pass, which caused a crash. And what did NASCAR say after the race? What an exciting race. We're so happy for Austin Dillon. Now, hey, it was an exciting race. It was a crazy finish. No question about that. It was also a very dangerous race that could have had deadly implications, and NASCAR was busy patting themselves on the back for what a wonderful race they had. Hey, you can make it Destruction Derby if you want to. Just don't try to hide under the guise of we really care about our drivers, or we're really trying to keep these races safe, because that's not the least bit true. We can all see that. You didn't penalize these guys. You didn't even have a talk to these guys. You didn't say anything about, hey, you know, on the fast tracks, you're not really supposed to shove guys into the corner. That's how major things take place. No. NASCAR was like, what a great finish. Let's just all remember how wonderful this was when Austin Dillon shoved a car out of his way to get through. Because here's the thing. It's going to happen to him. Someone's going to make a run at him. And let's all remember when it happens that we don't sit there and say, hey, what happened? I thought that was illegal. If we're going to have Destruction Derby, let's just go out and start crashing people, because that's apparently what NASCAR wants. They really, really want crashes. Hey, it is the duty of the race driver passing the car in front to execute a clean pass. That's how it's always been. You can't just shove them out of the way. That's not great racing. That's racing for morons at the Destruction Derby. Okay, couple other things we've got to get to. NBA Commissioner Adam Silver says he was really, really happy with the NBA All-Star Draft. And he thinks next year it's going to be televised. And I have already heard from a few sports media outlets that broadcasting these guys, choosing teams, is going to be amazing. Can you just imagine how great that's going to be when like Steph Curry and LeBron James are picking their teams and we show it on TV? Isn't that going to be great? I don't know. Is it? I mean, these guys are so conscious of every single move that they make. They don't give us anything good. Every single thing NBA players do feels like it's been rehearsed like 80 million times in front of a mirror. Now, I realize we're all hoping that there's going to be some really revealing conversation between these players. But what is it we think they're going to say exactly? Like LeBron is really going to go, man, I ain't taking Kevin Love. I'm already stuck with that fool every single day. Dude doesn't play defense, and he barely even bows to me in the hallways anymore. Like, now he just does this quick lean. No more bowing at the waist like he used to do when I first brought him to Cleveland. I got news for you. This isn't probably going to be exciting. It's going to be forced and staged and probably really, really dumb. You know, I'm trying to think of the last time we saw NBA guys trying to put on a little staged, I don't know, skit for us. Do you remember what that was?
Not two, not three, not four, not five, not six, not seven.
Yeah, do you see what I'm saying? This might not only be, like, not good, it might be really, really, really bad. I don't care one bit about the NBA All-Star Draft. Doesn't appeal to me whatsoever. Our last overreaction of the week. Yes, we've got to get to something that I know is on your mind. We've got to get to something that I know was on a lot of people's minds this week concerning NBA All-Star Weekend. Yes, it was the national anthem. And the biggest take out there, Fergie was absolutely terrible singing that national anthem at the NBA All-Star Game. What in the world was that? If you somehow didn't hear it, here's a little clip of her rendition of the national anthem prior to the NBA All-Star Game on Sunday. I'm warning you ahead of time. It's going to be a little rough. Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly wave at the twilight's last gleaming? Okay, here's the thing about Fergie's national anthem. Fergie can sing. Like, you might not have heard it just now. That sounded like she started off on a bad note, or maybe she couldn't hear herself or something. I've heard her sing. It's not that she's completely talentless or anything like that. She can sing. But here was the thing that stood out to me the most about this national anthem. Yes, it's awful. I'm not gonna say it was disrespectful like some people say. Like, Roseanne heard it and was like, yeesh, but I'm not really going to go down that path. It's more a poor decision as much as it is poor execution. Here's the thing. I'm sure, in fact, I'll guarantee, prior to her going out and singing the national anthem, Fergie had either a person or persons sit in with her, and they listened to her sing this version, and they sat and discussed how this would play. Now, we know the NBA has always been a little ahead of the curve as far as a lot of things socially, as far as a lot of things musically. The NBA just is that way. And I think that the people listening to this heard this and said, yeah, I think it'll work for the NBA because the NBA is a little ahead of the curve. Those are the people that I blame. I actually don't blame Fergie. I don't understand her getting the hate mail and that was so disrespectful and all those things. It was rough. Let's be honest. It was rough. The execution was not great, but more importantly, her supporting cast, the people that listened to the song prior to her actually doing it, those are the people that failed because they heard this awful rendition and said, you know what? That sounds really, really good. You've got to go out and sing it just like that. That sounded amazing. She sang it for them, and they encouraged her to do this. Those are the people that failed. Yes, she might have failed a little bit in the execution, and you could definitely tell she was flat in some spots, and like I said, maybe she just started off on the wrong note and couldn't get it back or whatever it was. But whoever approved this from the very, very beginning, those people are every bit as much to blame as Fergie. She tried something new. She tried something different. It was awful. It never should have gotten that far. Hey, tomorrow is Friday, and of course, we will be looking at the latest and greatest stories coming out in the world of sports. And we will also, as we do every week, look forward to the weekend in sports. We try to give you some of the best events that are out there to watch. Plus, as we do every single Friday, we will have our Daily Dose Top 5, and you know, you never, ever want to miss that. Have to say thank you so much for listening to the Daily Dose every single day. Thank you for the feedback. Thank you for the questions, the suggestions. Thank you so much for sharing the show with your friends, your coworkers, the people in your life. We do appreciate that so much. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all tomorrow. Have a great Thursday.